It really gives me a great honor to introduce Rabbi Yaakov Haber. Rabbi Haber came to the Orthodox Union a little over a year ago from Melbourne, Australia. We have spent many, many years in adult education programs and outreach throughout Australia. Literally thousands of people came to his classes and listened to his lectures. Since he came to the Orthodox Union, he has established a wonderful reputation in Jewish education, in Torah learning, and in outreach to the Jewish community. One of the innovative programs that Rabbi Haber has created in the Orthodox Union is known as Party. Each month, literally hundreds of groups get together to study and to discuss sources that Rabbi Haber puts together on various subjects, and it has really made an impact both in the synagogue, on college campuses, as well as in individual groups in homes. The Parties program probably is one of our most successful programs in the Orthodox Union, and it's only 1 year old. I can imagine what will happen after 2, 3, and 5 years. It will be a tremendous impact in the Orthodox Jewish community of outreach, in Torah, in learning, and understanding the sources of our faith. Rabbi Haber is an outstanding disciple of the great Gaon and Posek in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Chaim Pinchas Steinberg, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva Torah Or. He is a native of Buffalo, New York, and after spending many, many years of learning in Eretz Yisrael, he came back to his hometown, established an outstanding outreach center in Buffalo, and was the rabbi of one of the major synagogues in his native hometown. One of the things that I'd like to tell you about Rabbi Haber and invite you, both men and women, is through his shiur, his weekly shiur, sponsored by the New York region of the OU, in the Chrysler Building in a law office, every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1:30. What is so unusual about Rabbi Haber's shiur is that it's not an ordinary shiur. It's a shiur in Jewish philosophy, delving into the writings of Rav Tzedek HaKohen, the Maral of Prague, and Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lesato, and other outstanding Jewish philosophers and thinkers. If you want to know more about the shiur and information when we resume it in September, you simply have to call the OU office and ask for Rabbi Lev, and someone, myself or someone else, will put your name down on the class list and you'll receive the information. Rabbi Haber is the author of 2 books, and literally thousands of his tapes are distributed throughout the world. Tapes on various subjects, Chumash, Jewish philosophy, halacha. The tapes are really a wonderful collection for anyone who wants to delve into the Torah learning of our Jewish community. It is indeed a great pleasure and honor to introduce Rabbi Yaakov Haber in commemoration of the 9 days, and his subject, appropriately, is Jerusalem, the destruction we still mourn.
Thank you, Rabbi Lev. I never get to hear this in the office. It's worth coming to the Vacation Village to hear Rabbi Lev. One of the most trying epochs in the history of the Jewish people took place in the year 3828, or more famously known as the year 68 of the Common Era. It was at that time that most Jews lived in Israel. They flourished in Israel. Apparently, from the works of the historians of that time, business was good in Israel, the economy was thriving, there was a Torah Renaissance going on, publishing. The year 68 CE was a Renaissance year for the Jewish people. There was one serious problem that the Jews had to deal with, and that is that there was a great storm coming from the west. The Roman Empire was country by country, land by land, taking over the world, and they finally were getting close to the land of Israel. And as they were coming closer, and as this nightmare began to become a reality, because after all, I imagine that human nature being what it is just might have been something like Hong Kong. You know, it's not really going to go back to the Chinese. It's not really going to happen. But the Romans came closer and closer, and then finally decided that they wanted Jerusalem. Very interesting and significant what took place at that time. The Jews, in a very short time, went from being a unified nation, a nation where the Rabbanim called the shots in terms of halacha and hashkafa, a nation where everyone was able to work together, all of a sudden began to fragment over the issue, the political issue, of how to deal with the Roman Empire. And this is clear if you know the history. It's clear in the Gemara. You have to know the history first to see it in the Gemara. But there were a number of different groups that became very famous at that time. On the extreme right, I guess it would be was the Baryonim. This was a group of militant nationalists that decided that no matter what, the Romans are not going to take away the land of Israel from us, or as they put it in Aramaic, over our dead body. We're not going to give an inch back. On the opposite side, interesting, were Chazal, who the Christians like to call the Pharisees. We call them Chazal, the Prushim. They were of the opinion, apparently, they were led by the famous Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, they were of the opinion that not so fast. Let's talk to the Romans. Let's negotiate with them. Let's make some kind of a deal. Can't just be Meshuggahs and stand up there and let them mow us down. They're powerful. The Romans are powerful. There was hundreds of groups in between, not two or three. This was the beginning of the Ashyonim, or the Essenes as they're called, which decided that they want to get away from it all, ran out into the desert, the founders of the Dead Sea Scrolls, ran up to the top of Masada, a lot of them. Groups and groups and groups. And the closer the Romans came, the more division, the more politics over the question of how do we deal with the oncoming enemy, the Romans. Very interesting what went on. Very significant. Because for there to be political division, for there to be division as to how to deal with the Romans, whether we should give land for peace, etc., that somehow is acceptable. After all, they were Jews, and everybody had at least one opinion. What became unacceptable was the undermining of one group to another. What became unacceptable, apparently, was the smear campaign that took place against each one of them, and especially against the Gedolei Hador, specifically against Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai at that time. And we know, for instance, you know, we learn about the groups, Sukkim and the other ones, there was all kinds of different names, that denied the validity of the oral law. That was like a good argument. We believe in the written law, we don't believe in the oral law. Okay, what we don't understand is that this group was politically motivated, because by saying that they didn't believe in the oral law, what they were really saying is that these rabbis, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the yeshivotai, his whole yeshiva, are not the legitimate carriers of the Mesorah of the tradition. It wasn't a philosophical problem with the oral law. It was a political problem where they didn't want people to listen to the opinions of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, so they created a religious problem to disguise the political issue that was really at hand. I didn't come here tonight to give a history lesson, but what's interesting is that all of the undermining that all of the historians talk about, and all of the smearing, and all of what everybody was doing to hurt one another over a legitimate cause, Chazal and Yuma describes in two words: Sinas Chinam. When we hear, as children, we hear about the Sinas Chinam, the causeless hate that took place at that time, we think that somehow or another people just got mean to each other. No. There was a lot going on at the time. But it was causeless hate, because the hate that they were dispensing, the Lashon Hara and the Rechilas that they were saying, wasn't really true. It was only there to defend and to strengthen a political cause. So in fact, when they talked about Chazal, it was made up, it was causeless. When they talked about each other, it was causeless. The hate was there underneath. It was an underlying hate. Chazal call it Sinat Chinam. And I'll share with you the Gemara that I'm sure you've all heard. The Gemara says it in this language. The Gemara says, we understand that in the times of the first temple in Jerusalem, people were, hard to believe, but this is what the Gemara says, people were violating the worst of all sins. There was murder in the streets, shpichas damim, all types of incestuous and adulterous relationships going on, the Gemara says. And people were worshiping foreign gods. People were going to church. So we understand, the Gemara says, that the temple was destroyed. We can understand. Terrible what was going on. Crept into Judaism somehow. But the time, asks the Gemara, of the second temple, it was a good time. People were learning Torah. People were doing mitzvah. There was a renaissance. Talmud was being formed. It was a wonderful time. Why was the temple destroyed? Here the Gemara says, it was that sinas chinam, that political undermining over a legitimate issue, that caused the destruction of the temple. We simply did not behave properly. Does the Gemara Melamed this come to teach us? Shesinas chinam shkula k'neged gimel averus. That this causeless hate is equal to murder, incest, and idolatry all put together. We need to explain that. But before I do, let me share with you the Yerushalmi in Yuma, same place. Yerushalmi says, questions this deduction, says, how could you say that from here we learn that sinas chinam is equal to the three cardinal sins? In fact, it's not equal at all. We know that the destruction of the first temple, the Golos, the Babylonian exile, lasted a long 70 years. The Roman exile lasted, we're still here. Although we're in Vacation Village, it's still part of the Roman exile. We're in Golos. I don't have to tell you how much more bloodshed has occurred, how much more tragedy has occurred over the last 2,000 years than in the 70 years between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. So the Yerushalmi asked the question, how could you say that sinas chinam is the same as the three averus? It must be much worse. Because you look at the punishment, says the Yerushalmi. Zil goter anosha, look at the punishment, and if the punishment, as the Badli says, is the benchmark of the gravity of the sin, we've got a much worse situation with the second temple than we do with the first. So the Yerushalmi argues with the Bavli, good to know this argument, and says that sinas chinam, causeless hate, is not as bad as the three others, but in fact it is worse. Much, much, much worse. Now let's ask the question. Murder. I mean, that's a pretty hateful thing right there. Murder. Idolatry. These are averus. We never heard that a person should jump into a fire or kill themselves before they hate somebody. What makes it worse? So much, much worse. So I'd like to share with you, this is really the main point that I want to make this evening. I'd like to share with you a wonderfully profound insight, explanation of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon has a sefer on the Agadata of Rami Bar Chama and Baba Basra. And the Vilna Gaon says the following. He says there's a big difference between the three averus. The big difference between the sins that were committed with the first temple and sinas chinam. And listen to this. I'm so happy that it's the Gra saying this and not me, because it would be almost unacceptable. He says that it's possible that a person can violate the three cardinal sins, yet not be a terrible, evil person. Says the Vilna Gaon, murder, terrible. I mean, a person has to let themselves die before they commit murder. According to the Rambam, you lose your portion in the world to come. Terrible. I'm not coming, and the Vilna Gaon is not coming to minimize, but to maximize. But a person can lose their head. Person can get into a situation, most people don't kill, but a person can get into a situation where there's so much anger and there's so much frustration and I'm so boiling over with upset that I fall apart and I kill. It's possible. It doesn't necessarily define me as a murderer. I committed murder. A person can fall into a forbidden relationship. It's terrible. Please don't understand that I'm minimizing it. The worst thing, you aren't valyavar. But you can fall in. It doesn't necessarily become the definition. When we say, tell me about that person, it's not necessarily his or her definition. You want to know what that person is? They were involved in a forbidden relationship. And the culture could actually pull a person, says the Vilna Gaon, the culture could pull a person into an idolatrous relationship, with an idolatrous religion. As terrible as those things are, they are things that I do. They're not things that I am, necessarily. It's the Vilna Gaon, but sin es chinam. If a person hates, completely different. Hating is not something that I do. Hating is something that I am. You can't just, let's do hate. Let's commit hate. Let's violate the avera of hate. Person hates, that's belayed, says the Vilna Gaon. That's part of my heart. There's something wrong with my heart. Not necessarily with murder, but with hate. That's inside, not external, that's inside. It means that we have bad hearts. Says the Vilna Gaon, Rachmana liba boy. And the Torah requires good heartedness. So, you want to know why this Golus was 70 years, and this one, hopefully, let it end this year, is a couple of thousand years? Because this was about what I did, and the second Golus, the Golus we're in, is about what we are. And that makes all the difference in the world, because in Hashem's eyes, as much as he's concerned about what we do, it's only, and Reb Tzedek repeats this maybe a thousand times that I know it, it's only because it's a manifestation of what I am. But the ikar, the point, is my way. And I remember almost 20 years ago, I was 19 years ago, we were newly married, my wife and I lived in Yerushalayim, a sort of a blissful life, and we made a Sheva Brachos. I think it was a Sheva Brachos in our apartment. I don't remember for who. Met a Sheva Brachos, and a lot of people there, a lot of Nekayer were there, and very special people were there. And my Rebbe Rav Sheinberg came in for a few minutes, came into the Sheva Brachos. And there was a discussion at the table, not with Rav Sheinberg, but amongst the people, about a particular incident that had taken place that day or that week, about some mudslinging that was going on between one yeshiva and another yeshiva. And, of course, this wasn't something, unfortunately, it wasn't something that was so unusual. You know, there's a lot of bittle around, you know. That yeshiva is not the right one, and this yeshiva is not, you know, this Rosh Yeshiva doesn't really have the Derech, and he didn't learn by him, and he didn't learn there. There's a lot of that going around, at least at that time. A lot of criticism, one organization or the other. And a lot of bad feelings, ill feelings between different yeshivos. And there was discussion as to why this is, what's the problem, why is this going on? And one person said, well, you know, there's a lot of jealousy. And another one said, it's not so much jealousy, it's an economic issue, you know, everyone wants needs the donation. So, not so simple to, you know, you have to knock the other one, you have to knock the competition. And I remember that the conversation was going on and on and on, and then my Rebbe spoke, Rav Sheinberg. And I remember the words stuck in my mind. I wish all the words that he said stuck in my mind, like these three words. He said, you know what I think? You know why all of this criticizing and bittul and lashon hara and moti shemra, you want to know why I think that's going on? He says, thou sefelt and lave toiv. We're missing good heartedness. A good person doesn't talk lashon hara about another person. It's as simple as that. So we can make groups and make classes in lashon hara and all kind of learn the halacha. It's very important. But we have to know the underlying principle is But a good person doesn't hurt another person. We don't mug people. We don't beat people in the street. We don't crash into their cars for fun. If we have good hearts, we don't do personality assassination. If we do have good hearts, we think before we talk. The felt, he said, and lathe toys. And really, that's the Vilna Gaon. All of the averus, all of the minutiae of halacha, which is being violated, and not minutiae. What it comes down to, the worst thing that we can do, is lose our heart, lose the goodness. Because the goodness, the lave toe, is what it's all about. I'd like to draw a parallel, halachic parallel, if I may. I'd like to put before you, and help me on this one, two scenarios, and tell me which you think is worse. Scenario A, a good Jew keeps kosher, brat kosher, hamish kosher, everything. Goes into the butcher shop, regular butcher, the Erlich Yid, the Erlich butcher, and he buys a couple of steaks. And he goes home and he eats it. And what he doesn't know is that that day, the butcher was having a very rough time. And in the middle of the day, a non-kosher, a non-Jewish butcher came in and said he's leaving for the weekend and he's got all of this merchandise. And he offers the kosher butcher his plate of meat for 10 cents on the dollar. And the kosher butcher is sitting there, oh, he's more, what am I going to do? I need money. This would be such a wonderful thing because it's Arab Shabbos and 10 cents on the dollar and I charge it ready double, it's machayah. And he falls into the trap. He takes the merchandise, sells it, stays up all night and he's crying. And Yankel, the brat kosher yid, ate the tray. Scenario A. Now let's try another scenario. Christman gets up in the morning and he says, I've had enough of this religion. I've been keeping kosher for all of these years. It's been stuffed down my throat. I don't really want to do it. I just haven't had the nerve to make the break. Today, I'm going to be a man. I'm going to get on the subway, and I'm going to get off in the middle of nowhere, and I'm going to walk into the first butcher shop that I see, and I'm going to buy some meat. Trade the meat. And he gets off the train in Chinatown and he walks into a butcher shop and everything's hanging, dogs, the cast, everything. And he asks him if he has any, you know, luncheon. And the Chinaman gives it to him. And he goes home and he eats it. He eats it. Makes a hummus, you know. He spreads, doesn't wash. Eats this meal. Little does he know that that day the kosher butcher was going away to the mountains and he wanted to unload his merchandise. And everybody else who was Jewish also was going to the mountains. So he goes to the Chinaman and he says, look, take my meat off my hands. So have it, the sellers will be good, don't worry. And whatever you get, you'll pay me. So this Moshala bought kosher meat, Mahadrin min a Mahadrin, salted, everything. So here is Yankel, who thinks he's eating kosher, and he's eating treif. And here is Moshe, who thinks he's eating treif, and he's eating kosher. Who's in God's eyes the worst of the two? Everybody says the second. Let me ask the question differently. What's worse, attempted murder or accidental murder? Think about that for a minute. Attempted murder, that means I shoot on purpose but I miss. Or accidental murder, I shoot by accident but I hit. Well, I'm glad we're all good hearted. So here's the Gemara. The Gemara asks this question. And the Gemara says, we have a discussion. Well, I want to say, does anybody disagree that number two is? The white part is. But the Gemara says as follows, as the Marshal understands the Gemara. Marshal, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin Ein Zayin, Samach Zayin rather, the Gemara says, Yehure Aveira, Kushin Me Aveira. I shall understand that's exactly these two cases. You have the one person on the one hand who had the Yehure Aveira, he had all the thoughts and the intentions to do the Aveira, but he didn't actually do it, against the other person who did the Aveira but didn't even know he was doing it. You know, I ingest a treif, it's Matamte and Mithalei. Terrible thing to ingest treif. It's Shove, you still have to do Triva, you have to. But the Gemara says, you can't compare the two. And everybody said it intuitively. Yehure Aveira, Kushin Me Aveira, says the Marsha, that in terms of what I did, so obviously the one who ate the treif is the worst person, he's in worse shape. In terms of what I am, it's the person who attempted the murder who's the worst of the two. In God's eyes, it's the person who in his heart wanted to sin that's missing the main thing. It doesn't even make a difference if the sin went through or didn't went through, go through. And for that matter, it doesn't make such a difference if the person actually sinned. What makes a difference, says the Gemara, is the Hirhure Aveira, it's what's in my heart. So says the Gemara. But isn't this exactly the words of the Vilna Gaon? Because the Vilna Gaon is telling us that the first Beis HaMikdash was Aveira. And the second Beis HaMikdash, the destruction, was Hirhure Aveira. That to do not with what I'm doing, but with what I am. And Yehure Aveira, Kushin Me Aveira. That's the show. Let's go back for a moment to the history. You know, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Gadol HaDor, was the leader of the generation. Mar says he was an astute businessman. Mar in Gittin, 50 years of his life, he was in business. The greatest scholar of the generation. Lived in a time that he decided that he needed to negotiate for the people of Israel. And it was such, it's just hard to, even though we know the story, it's just hard, it's mind-boggling. But the only way this Gadol HaDor, and imagine in your mind, the Gadol HaDor, the only way he could do what he wanted to do, what he felt was right to do, and that was to leave Jerusalem and to speak to Vespasian, the Roman emperor, was to start a rumor about himself that he died, put himself into a coffin, and be smuggled out. That was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and that was the animosity that was going on in that generation, that they would be willing to kill Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Don't ruin my politics. They felt strongly, to say the least. As to the whole negotiation for faith, everybody knows the story. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai finally came to the Sapien. They exchanged a number of witticisms and parables and metaphors. And the Sapien saw Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai as a great mind. He saw his mind, he saw his genius. And he said, "I like you, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai," put forth an offer. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai all of a sudden was talking, whether they wanted to, for him to do this or not, he was speaking for all of Israel. He became at that moment, perforce, the representative of the Jewish people. And it was there that he uttered his famous words, "Tein li avne v'chachamel." Leave us the yeshivas, we will have continuity if we have Torah. And the Romans agreed to that. A few years later, already at the end of the life of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he was sitting with his students, his five major students, in Yavne. And if you come to our shiur in the Chrysler building, our Chrysler shiur, no, we learned Pirkei Avos there, and I pointed out a number of times that the Arizal tells us that Pirkei Avos is unique. You know, all of the rabbis that speak in Pirkei Avos said hundreds of things. But what's in Pirkei Avos is significant and was put into this particular book because, says the Arizal, A, they're avos lechachma. They are fathers of wisdom. From here we can learn out so many different things. Two, says the Arizal, these were things that these rabbanim, hanoyim, fought for all of their life. And three, says the Arizal, these were statements that were made on the deathbed of these hanoyim. Takes on a whole different significance when you realize that these were the parting words of these Tanoim to their students. This is what I lived for. This is my life, in a sense. The greatest people, the greatest lives in history, this is their life. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, after all of the tumult of Yerushalayim, said to his students, "Suru, Ezui derech Yeshara, Shiyivar loy ha'adam." What have we learned from all of this? What is the right way? What is the correct path for a person to follow? Suru. Very interesting. Rav Chaim Volozhin says, don't look in the Gemara to find the answer to this question. Suru. Look at what's going on. Go out of the base medrash. Look around a little bit. Look at the destruction. Look at what happened to Yerushalayim. Look what happened to all of the cities and the Mekoymos Haktoshim. Suru. And come back. This is your homework assignment. Tell me, Eza Huderach Yeshara, Shiyivar Leh Ha'adam. Tell me the right way. The straight path. And they all saw it. They all looked around and they all saw the destruction and they tried to put their finger on what was the issue. One of them came back and he said, "I am toiv." You know, you have to have a good eye. A good eye, the opposite of an eye in hara, opposite of a bad eye. I mean, love blood. Let another person have. What does it bother you? Get rid of the jealousy. Another one came back and he said, "Chavertoy, we're missing camaraderie in this people. We have to come together as friends. Shochentoy, we need more neighborliness. Come together as strangers." All true and all right and all correct epitomization of the period. Amar Rav Elazar ben Arah, says the Mishnah, "Leiv Toiv." You know what the derech is?
good heart. Late night. Omar, Rav Yosen, and Ben Dakai said our leader of the generation who saw it all, experienced it all, fought through it all, and now was leaving this world, says some raya ani at the loves of an Iraq. He's got it. He put his finger on it. Shibaklaus Burrow, these right. Because if you've got the late toe, if you've got the good heart, then you've got the good eye, and you've got the good friends, and you've got the good neighbor. It's all there. If our hearts are in order. And if our hearts are not in order, we can learn, and that was the situation, you can learn, we can do mitzvahs, we can have renaissances, we can write books, we can do everything. If the leg tov is not there, you have Parvan Beis HaMikdash. And as the B'nai Yisrael writes, and everybody knows it themselves, that it doesn't help to medicate a disease if the cause of it is still there. As long as that lays tov, and it's not even sinas chinam, as only John says, it's deeper than that. As long as the lays tov is not there, we can do all the schools in the world to bring Mashiach, to bring the Geula. We need the lays. Just in conclusion, you know, I'm thinking lately the last couple of months as I hit my 40th birthday. I just started to think about the differences between when I was a child and now. And I know, I think you'll agree with me, that, you know, there's always been a sort of a box. Who's in and who's out? So when I was a kid, you know, they used to talk in Buffalo, New York. Believe it or not, we used to talk about this in Buffalo, New York. We used to talk about a Shomer Shabbos. You know, Shmuel is a Shomer Shabbos to you. He's a nice fellow, but he's not a Shomer Shabbos. And that was sort of the definition of who's in and who's out. And it's only right. Shmir Shabbos is fundamental. It's very, very difficult in those days. I mean, even earlier it was more difficult, but even in those days it was very difficult to close your business on Shabbos and to lose a job. Now there's all kinds of laws. It's different today. But if you were a Shomer Shabbos, that was a lot. But then I noticed the, and this is not bad, this is good, I think, that the box, you know, starts to get a bit narrower and narrower. If kashrus, fair enough, good kosher. What kind of kashrus? Well, he buys in that butcher shop. It's not really in the box. It's already a little bit out of the box. Selfish. Head covering, okay, but what's it made out of? Who made it? All kinds of shilas about if you're in or if you're out. Shomer Shabbos is Hagaret. Then, you know, what did your father do? It became like the box got narrower and narrower and narrower and narrower. And then it comes to a point. I don't want to say anything bad, and if it wouldn't be the beginning of the 9 days where I think that we have to think about this, I wouldn't say it at all. It comes to a point that, you know, we're so exclusive that it's very hard to find somebody to talk to. Everybody is out of the box. Like we're in prison. Now, please, it's extremely important that we get on a higher and higher and higher madrega. We all want that. We all do that. We daven for that. But does that mean that the person who just doesn't sort of keep up with it should be excluded on every level? He can't eat the food. He can't talk. And I have a feeling, and I'm making a very honest remark, I have a feeling that this is not all religion. I have a feeling that similar to the time of the Dayasheni. A lot of it is sort of self-protection. It's hard to become Iran. And I want to tell you something. Lest anyone think, and I include myself, that we're even the wide-angle people, the great to care, have no patience for the narrow people. Because they're not in the fight. This works in all directions. The school. I see the schools becoming, for our children, becoming more and more narrow, elitist. No longer a situation where I have a son who's a good boy, bright boy, wants to learn, good student, that he's automatically accepted into a yeshiva. Why not? No. If he has Eloy, does he say, hey, I want to get my son, who's a good boy, into one of the yeshivas? They call the Rebbe. What does he think about during the summer? Narrower, narrower, narrower. Exclusive. Everything is exclusive. Elitist. And then you hear terms like these new terms. It's no longer, you can't say frum or not frum. It's unzure, hamisha, shivisha, zidisha, everything with the sh, you know, all the sh, you know. It's good in a sacra. It's good that Klal Yisrael develops to the point that there's a place for everyone, and but the total intolerance which could Chas V'Shalom become, I think the Gemara's definition of Sinas Chinam is unacceptable. It's what the Gra says, examine your ways. It's unacceptable. It's not Torah. Just yesterday, I received a phone call from one of the grandchildren of the Lakewood Rosh Yeshiva, you know, one of Rav Aaron Kotler's grandsons. He was very interested in getting the Neitera. It was a very encouraging, inspirational phone call. They're very interested in getting, said to me that we have an army of 2,000 and we want to get them out there into the world to teach Torah. And they wanted to know if I can participate in this army building, our program, party. And we started to talk and to discuss, and, you know, I said something like, I probably shouldn't have said it, I said, well, it's about time. Good morning. And we talked about the cultures, and it's still difficult, and it's still an uphill battle. So I sometimes can't control myself. So I said the heresy. I said, you know, Rav Aaron Kotler, that's all, came to this country. In my opinion, you know, he did what he had to do. He said, we need Gedolim, we need Rosh Yeshivas, and he did it brilliantly. He built that. He built Gedolim, he built Rosh Yeshivas. But I said, I know that this can't be proven, but I have a feeling that if Rav Aaron, Zecher Tzadik, the Kaddish Levracha, was alive today, he would be the biggest supporter of the Kiruv movement. That's what I said. You know what this Einikel of Rav Aaron told me? He says, you're wrong. You can prove it. He says, what did Rav Aaron do before he came to America? He lived in Klesk. Where's Klesk? Klesk. He was a Rosh Yeshiva in Klesk. He had a Rosh Yeshiva, you know, think of a Rosh Yeshiva, he had 3-1A through high school. That's what he had. Klesk was a city, he tells me, I didn't know this, Klesk was a city that the majority of that city were Bundisten and Maskilin. And there was a little craze there, Rav Aaron's Klesk, that we know about. Rav Aaron took a half a day every day, knocked on the doors, he told me, of the Bundisten and the Maskilin, and beg them that no matter what you are, what you want to be, Mimonavshech, as this fellow put it, your child should learn something about Judaism. Please send him to my school. He begged with them. He cried at the door. He pleaded with them. So he says, that's Rav Aaron. And that's the Rav Aaron, he tells me, that we've got to bring back
today. The Rebbeim was the late probe that we have to stop talking about exclusivity and start talking about inclusivity. I don't even know if that's a word. That's how far. We have to be inclusive. Let me just end with my favorite thought of Nachman Breslov. Say it everywhere I go. What Nachman says, so interesting, that in Jewish law, the right has so much importance. You know, you put on your right shoe before your left shoe in the morning, you put your tefillin on your left hand so you can wrap it with your right. Right is important to Yamin, Leib Chacham LeYamin. So Rav Nachman Breslov asks, why is it then that the lave, the heart, which is the most important, yeah, the most important thing that we have, on the wrong side, on the left? Says Rav Nachman, says if you understand that the purpose of this lave, this heart, is for myself, you have a good question. But if you understand that Hashem gave you this heart not for you, but for the person who's standing in front of you, it's on his right. We should be zochet to see the building of the Beit HaMikdash, the chibur, the shechinah of all of Klal Yisrael, zochet to the Hishromimus HaTorah, and most important, the Hishromimus of the lave of Klal Yisrael, the Beit HaMikdash. Thank you very much. Thank you.